9. My life for Lupercal. No one is listening anymore. No one. He has lost control. I am first, Captain, says Abaddon, almost to remind himself. No one else is listening. He thought it would be glorious when it finally came. He thought the end would be glorious. A victory beyond victories, an illumination beyond illuminations, the crowning triumph, the greatest achievement of any warrior. But it is not. It is more horrific than he ever imagined. It is an unfathomable atrocity. He was steeled for it, of course. A man, even a warrior as infamously ruthless as Ezekiel Abaddon, does not go into such an undertaking blind. He resolves himself. He centers his mind. He inures himself from the carnage that will follow. He makes himself ready, not just for the pain and the blood and the loss and the effort, but for the mental carnage. This is Terra, the throne world. Any other action pales by comparison, and not merely in scale. This is the biggest war he has ever been part of, but he's indifferent to that. To invade Terra, to conquer it and bring it to compliance, that is an act of desecration. It is the ultimate iconoclasm, a breaking of oaths and a shattering of rules. It requires an inhuman strength of will. To turn against your species and your cradle world, to turn against your creator, to turn against everything you were and renounce it all. That takes singular resolve. But he was prepared for that. Abaddon has made his choice long since, and he is strong. He was ready to witness the horror, ready to mete out the havoc, ready to withstand the conceptual shock of what he was doing. He was even prepared to stand alongside the demon things that disgusted him in order to get the deed done. For, after the end, there would be glory, a triumph, a peerless victory. A tyrant would be dead, a toxic regime overthrown. His kind would be free, his beloved father vindicated and crowned, and a new and better world born from the flames. Abaddon had oathed that he would do anything that had to be done without flinch or hesitation, for beyond anything, it would prove his worth, his loyalty, his courage, his ability. The victory would be his, for he was the Lord Commander on the field, his father's chosen proxy, the tip of the spear, a new master of war and mankind, who would deliver the coup de grace and claim the greatest feat of all. It would all be worth it. But it is not. And he is not. No one is listening anymore. He has lost control, and this is not something to which the word victory could ever be applied. It is obscenity. From the burning slopes of Coriolis Park, fast by the blood-washed bastion of Augustan, which cooks like a dirty rag, he sees the swarming host engulfing the fortresses of Lycia and Naxos, the palisades at Crucis Hill, the broken line of the Via Aquila and the ramparts of Marquis Bar. He sees the sundering towers toppling one by one in fire and debris, their flanks disintegrating, falling away like carving glaciers. He sees buildings scalped and eviscerated. He sees the sudden uprush of titanic dust clouds as spires are leveled, filling streets for kilometers at a time. He sees the burning spans and collapsing bridges, the furnace line of the horizon, the uncounted dead and the unnumbered deathless. 16 kilometers ahead, Antiphrates Fortress, perhaps the last of the Palatine bastions, enters its death throes. Explosions shudder beneath its skin, and the entire fortress, a colossal island of stone and steel rising above the Palatine zone, begins to slope, capsizing like a yacht at sea, wallowing into the stagnant mire that the landscape has become. Everything. Stone, ground, rock, metal, has begun to ooze, seeping clotted filth and tar like fat rendered from meat. A cheer goes up as Antiphrates succumbs, a throaty roar of a million voices that shakes the sky. Ekron Fal has accomplished this cataclysm. Ekron Fal and his Justarin and his screaming hosts. Ekron Fal, veteran of Istvan, a true monster of destruction, whose cataphracty plate shifts and seethes and changes like a living thing. Ekron Fal, who has ignored all of Abaddon's summonses. To the west, 50 kilometers, a line of pestilential smoke marks the advance of the Cthulhan Reavers and their word-bearers' retinues. At their head, their master Malabro, reckless Tarshes Malabro, joyful in his killing, the superlative terror soldier, carrying the profaned banners of Bab Bastion aloft to boast of his deeds. Tarshes Malabro, who has refused to acknowledge Abaddon's repeated commands. No one is listening. From where he stands on the burning slopes, Abaddon feels as if he can see all the way to the very Delphic battlements, though they must be 60 kilometers distant. The Delphic. The proud Delphic. With Antiphrates and the Palatine principles gone, the Delphic is all that remains. A final rampart girdling a final fortress. It is already assaulted at almost every side. Serob Kargul, Lord Contemptor and the Death Guard have reached it. Lord of Silence Vorx and his Death Guard echelons too. The wild hosts of World Eaters are gouging at its southern hem. Voris Ikari, Captain of the Fourth, that unbridled sadist, is there. So too Taras Bolt and the Third, singing their Davinite doxologies. So too Kalintus and Ninth, Dorgadon and Tenth, Zistrion and 13th. So too all the demons of hell and the gnawing restless dead who will not lie down and be damned. Voris Ikari, Taras Bolt, Kalintus, Dorgadon, Zistrion, them and the rest besides, who have disregarded his signals and declined his instructs and spurned his demands for vox contact. The command link is down, his adjutant tells him. There is too much interference to establish contact. And Captain Ikari's seniors report he is in the thick of combat and a link is impossible. And no response from Captain Dorgadon's units. And Third Command repeats that Captain Bolt cannot disengage to speak with you at this time. No one is listening. No one wants to listen. They are lost in their lusts and consumed by that which consumes them. More and more damning, they think it is Abaddon's cupidity that issues these demands, that he wants this victory for himself, that he wants this glory, and that he resents their gains and seeks to restrain them as they race ahead. If only they understood. How can he make them listen?
I am First Captain, he murmurs.
My lord, his adjutant, Ulnok, approaches up the slope.
Speak.
Captain Barudin commends himself to you. He reports 5th Company is now closing on the Delphic and is engaged with White Scar's forces. He urges you to join him without delay, so you may cherish this triumph as brothers and break the wall together. He regrets he cannot link with you directly while engagement is ongoing. Abaddon spits on the ground.
Logistics? He asks.
The flight carter stands ready for your word, sir. They are fueled and prepped as you instructed.
Then I give it.
Ulnok hesitates. Lord Captain, the pilots direct me to say there is no suitable landing zone in this vicinity.
Then I direct you to ask them to select one. Have them tell me where they can set down, if they would be so very kind.
Have them select a damn site, any site,
and I will draw my companies there.
Yes, Lord. To, embark, Lord.
You heard me.
Ulnok hurries away. Airborne assault, my captain. Abaddon turns and sees Baraxa descending the slope to join him. At the heels of the Second Company captain come Sykar of the Justerin and Phaeton of Seventh. Baraxa, his helm removed, reaches him and bows his head.
Airborne, he repeats with a wary smile. A rash gamble, Ezekiel. The Delphic and its voids are as strong as shit. They'll burn birds out of the air. I admire the flourish, but we'll take the final fortress better on foot.
No flourish, Azelas, says Abaddon. No airborne assault.
But I just heard you say, Baraxa begins.
You came then, Abaddon says, cutting him off.
Sykar and Phaeton have joined them.
Well, you summoned me, so why would I not? Sykar replies. You were most insistent, First Captain, says Lycus Phaeton.
A curious pattern has begun to appear on his face in the last few weeks that looks like some kind of dermal infection, but which seems to be scarification. There is a fresh gash across his brow that appears to be welling yellow ichor.
No one is listening, says Abaddon.
My lord,
Baraxa says, frowning.
I was insistent because no one is listening, says Abaddon.
He gestures at the burning world.
No one. Not anymore. I am First Captain, but that, it seems, means nothing. Everything is broken. Everything is madness.
We came, says Sykar.
Abaddon looks at them and nods, mastering his rage and remembering himself.
I need you to understand, he tells them, his voice low. This isn't pride. This isn't some fit of indignation on my part. I'm not trying to hobble the other companies so that First can claim the laurels.
We didn't think it was,
says Baraxa. And it's not remorse, says Abaddon. Not at all. No last-minute qualm or compunction. Even though...
He pauses and looks back at the atrocity behind him.
Even though, brothers, look at what we've done.
Then why summon us?
Asks Phaeton, his tone curt.
Seventh was locked in at Palomas Bar, alongside 16th. We had Dawn's puppets falling before us. Thane himself, his back to the wall.
Everything is broken, says Abaddon.
Ezekiel,
Baraxa begins.
Listen to me. Everything is broken. Everything we stood for. The structure and discipline of the Sons of Horus. The things that made us the very best of all. Ruined. Gone. Because a few damn orders have gone astray,
asks Phaeton.
This day is like no other, Ezekiel. This victory unparalleled. I think even you might forgive the heedless energy and zeal of our captains as they race to conclude this business. Let them have their moment and revel in it.
He pauses.
Let me have mine, he adds.
Think for a minute, says Abaddon.
One damn minute!
What we do today shapes us for tomorrow. What we are now, we will be afterwards. The Sons of Horus, like the lunar wolves we were, are the finest of all legions. The personification of controlled precision in war. And here, in this cataclysm, on this day of days, we forget ourselves and fall apart. Our values and authorities are lost, discarded, ruined.
All this because the seniors have disregarded a few of your signals,
asks Phaeton.
Enough, Lycus, whispers Baraxa.
No, not enough,
says Phaeton. He looks at Abaddon.
You are a great man, Ezekiel, finest warrior I ever saw, and I am proud to call you brother and commander. But this pique is unbecoming.
Phaeton, Baraxa growls.
Shut up, Azelas,
says Phaeton.
It ill suits you, Ezekiel, to stand at the edge of the rear line and pitch a fit of indignation when your orders, barked from a great distance, are overlooked. Where are you, man? It should be you at those walls, leading for the front. The captain should be begging you for the chance to follow at your heels. They should be pleading with you for an order that lets them stand with you in honour.
I was there, says Abaddon quietly.
You were where?
I was there the day this began, says Abaddon. I was there at the front, all the way from Lion's Gate when it fell, all the way along the Gilded Walk and the Grand Processional, right there at the front, like us, carried by the energy and the glory, rejoicing in this triumph.
Then why are you here?
Asks Phaeton.
Why the hell are you here, skulking in the rear lines, squawking orders like a... Enough!
Baraxa snaps.
Because... says Abaddon, looking directly at Lycus Phaeton. Everything is broken.
Brother, Captain,
says Phaeton, his tone more moderate. There is concern in his eyes.
I know you have misgivings. You always have, and I understand. I know you lack trust in the etheric powers we employ, and think we should not invest ourselves so much. I understand. The warp calls who it calls.
It is a friend to us, and without it, we would not have taken this seat of power.
Wrong, says Sykar.
This is a soldier's war. Always has been. We don't need Neverborn filth to fight it for us. This is about us. The stand we make. The rights we seek to avenge. I understand Ezekar's position. We have surrendered too much control to the immaterial.
No, says Phaeton. Not wrong, Hellas.
How can you think that? All we do for the Lupercal. He is the one who has ordained this. He is the one who has invested us so. He chose the immaterial as our weapon, and it has served us well. He has perfected its use, and thus made this triumph possible. He has shown us how to control it.
Has he? Asks Abaddon.
Of course, says Phaeton.
Ulnok has returned.
Well, asks Abaddon.
My lord, Flight Carder has selected Sacristy Field to the south of Hasgard Gate. They report the terrain there will support a landing operation.
Tell them 2 hours, says Abaddon. Tell them I want Stormbirds for 6 companies. Yes, my lord.
We are embarking? Asks Phaeton, puzzled.
Yes, says Abaddon. Those that have deigned to respond to my orders are embarking. That includes you and 7th, like us.
Embarking for what purpose? Asks Phaeton. An airborne run at the Delphic will be insane.
We are returning to the spirit, says Abaddon.
The 3 captains stare at him.
Are you joking?
Sykar asks.
Are you mad?
Asks Phaeton.
Everything is mad. And everything is broken, says Abaddon. We should all be returning. Every last one of the sons of Horus. But you're the only bastards who would listen.
We are this close to the finish,
Phaeton cries, holding up a thumb and index finger almost touching.
You've lost your way, Ezekiel. Lost your way and your mind. No one is pulling out. We're at the walls, brother. The fortress is ours. You'd have us withdraw at the very last gasp and give up all we've achieved.
Malabra can finish it, says Abaddon. Ikari can finish it. Fal can raise the place to the ground and carry the tyrant's head out on a stick for all I care. They're at the walls, as you say, so they can finish this murder. Our place is at our father's side.
Phaeton starts to protest again. Baraxa silences him with a raised hand. He stares at Abaddon.
Why?
He asks.
Why, Ezekiel? What do you know that we don't? Our Lord Lupercal, whom I love more than all things, needs us, says Abaddon. He has taken leave of all sense. I believe now, more than ever, he has become too enthralled by the powers he has unleashed. You asked where I was, Lycus. Ask instead, where is he? Where is Lupercal? He should have led this from the front. He has not set foot on this world. He has not raised a hand in this fight. I have longed for him to be the Lupercal I know, and he has not.
So, this is what? Churlishness?
Phaeton asks.
Vexation that he has left the tiresome hard work to you? He's Lupercal, your child. You're the first captain. This is your damn job.
My job, Lycus, is to protect the person of my beloved father, whatever ails his mind, murmurs Abaddon. First and foremost, my life for the Lupercal. No oath matters more, not even the illumination of this pretend god at his gaudy palace. No one is listening to me. Everything is broken, and we must make haste to mend it before it is lost forever. Lupercal, our legion, everything we are.
What do you know, Ezekiel?
Sykar asks. The master of the Justerian's voice is very small, just a hoarse whisper coming from his immense plated form. There is a hint of fear in it.
I have spoken with Argonis, says Abaddon.
He sighs.
Damn, it feels like an age ago. The hours are broken too. I've been trying to rally you all ever since. Kynor says the voids have been lowered. The spirit is wide open.
They gaze at him.
If it's a ruse, says Abaddon, then it's a private one, known only to our father. Horus himself ordered it done.
I think he is taunting our enemy. I think he is, in all madness, inviting direct contest. Our foe may be close to death, brothers, but he has fury left in him yet. Fury that will double and redouble, given such reckless opportunity. I believe our Lupercal has underestimated the danger of this gambit. I do not even think it was his choice. All I know for certain is that our main force is here, wading in the mire and ignoring commands, and he is on the spirit, essentially unprotected. I have called in the Stormbirds for immediate return. We move now. The fight is not here, brothers. The real fight is not here at all.